Brendan took his time walking down the path, enjoying not only the stillness and quiet of the night around him, but also the sense of anticipation. He knew the moment Ryan entered the park, the connection between them growing stronger as he approached. The sensation low in his belly was almost soothing. After his 3 long days of errands for Beckett and Ryan's near-constant presence at his friend's side, Brendan had grown impatient. So, it seemed, had Ryan. Brendan laughed as he realized that Ryan was rushing to meet him. The connection was growing stronger at a very quick pace. There was no way the boy was moving at his regular speed. The path cut through a copse of trees, and Brendan hid in the shadows, wanting to take a moment to just watch. He so rarely got to observe Ryan while he was awake now, and though Brendan wasn't likely to admit it, he missed being able to look his fill without having Ryan grow snappish. With a sigh, Brendan realized that his plans were about to be ruined. He leaned against the nearest tree and scowled. There was someone sitting hunched over on the merry-go-round, digging in the sand with a stick. Brendan recognized him immediately. Even if he hadn't once interrogated the kid, he'd watched Ryan run off with him enough in the last 2 weeks. Spencer Smith was far from home, and he was upset enough that he wasn't paying attention to his surroundings. It was dangerous to do in any city, really, but was doubly so in Beckett's. The boy rubbed at his forehead a little before sitting up straight to stretch his muscles. He arched his back and, lacing his fingers tightly together, reached his arms high above his head. A soft moan reached Brendan's ears, and the vampire smiled a little at the breathy sound. As he came out of the stretch, Spencer's eyes fluttered open, and Brendan felt the smile freeze on his face. Such pretty blue eyes. Brendan could hear Gerard's voice as clearly as if the other vampire had been whispering in his ear. He watched as long lashes slipped down again, hiding his eyes as the boy once again focused on the little hole he was digging. "I saw them from across the street." No, Brendan thought. It was coincidence, nothing more. There were hundreds of boys with lovely blue eyes in the city. And even if there weren't, it was none of Brendan's business. He learned early to keep his head down when it came to his elders and their extracurricular activities. He watched as Ryan appeared at the other end of the path, hurrying much the way Brendan had figured he was. He allowed himself a small smile and waited for the moment that Ryan realized he wasn't alone. The boy didn't disappoint, going momentarily still when Spencer called out to him. Brendan nearly laughed at the flash of annoyance in his eyes, and made note to bring it up every time Ryan pretended that he didn't want Brendan around. Ryan made his way to the merry-go-round, spinning it slowly before climbing on and sitting next to the other boy. They spoke quietly, though Brendan could still hear most of it. It was so different to watch Ryan with Spencer. He never gave this much of his attention to anyone else, never bothered with the problems of others. Ryan was sad, Brendan could tell. Sad and worried. He had a lovely heart and an incredible amount of love for his best friend. They made Ryan who he was, and Brendan would safeguard that at all costs. "Just places," Spencer said, as Brendan pushed away from the trees and quickly closed the distance between himself and the humans. "Well, that certainly clears that up," Brendan replied with a smile as he slid his hands into his pockets. Ryan glared at him for interrupting, but Brendan paid the expression no mind. Spencer was staring at him, taking in his clothes with eyes that were far more interested than they should be. Brendan filed that thought away for later. "Aren't you going to introduce me to your friend?" he asked, turning his attention back to Ryan. The boy's mutinous look grew darker, and Brendan blew him a kiss. Brendan knew he didn't imagine the way Ryan's gaze briefly dropped to his mouth before returning to his eyes.
"Spencer, this is Brendan. He likes to lurk," Ryan said.
"Ryan Ross, that's not very nice. I can do so much more than lurk. Would you like me to make a list?" He opened his mouth dramatically, waiting for Ryan to protest. He didn't disappoint.
"No!"
he exclaimed. Spencer was looking from Ryan to Brendan with curious eyes. There was something he wanted to say, Brendan could tell, but years of secret keeping on Ryan's behalf kept him from coming out and putting it into words. He could definitely see why Ryan cared so much about him. "I need to go home," Spencer said finally, disentangling himself from his cross-legged position. His legs were a little wobbly when he stood up, but he managed to stay on his feet. "Are you sure?" Ryan asked, standing along with him, prepared to follow if necessary. Brendan reminded himself that he liked Ryan's compassion. Also, that throwing the boy over his shoulder would not produce the desired results. "Yeah," Spencer said, waving Ryan away. "I've been gone a while already. Someone's going to notice soon. I'll see you tomorrow."
"Okay,"
Ryan said uncertainly. Brendan took the opportunity to grab his sleeve and draw him closer. Ryan resisted at first, but when Spencer didn't turn around again, steadily making his way back toward the road, he finally gave in.
"Come on, let's go," Brendan urged.
"I'm not in the mood anymore," Ryan said flatly.
"That's okay," Brendan replied. "I have 15 minutes to change your mind."
And he would, Brendan knew. Ryan was incredibly easy to get worked up. Any combination of caresses to the back of his neck, a hand down his arm, whispered words in his ear, or fingers carded through his hair would do the trick. Brendan intended to try them all. They spent the walk back to Ryan's apartment in silence. By the time they got there, Ryan was half-leaning on Brendan, body all pliant and flexible, just the way Brendan liked it. They got the elevator to themselves, most likely because of the dark look Brendan gave a tenant with several heavy shopping bags, than due to any politeness on the part of Ryan's neighbor. Ryan didn't notice. He was too busy licking a line up the side of Brendan's throat. The hallway was long, and Brendan seriously considered just pushing Ryan up against a wall. Only the yapping from the Pomeranian in apartment 6E stopped him. Ryan finally got the door open on the third try, and Brendan wasted no time in crowding him and pushing him inside. They only made it to the bedroom because Brendan finally did give in to his urge to put Ryan over his shoulder. The boy squeaked and put up a token protest, but all complaints ceased when he was tossed down onto the bed. There wasn't much talking after that. Brendan considered it a small victory. He knew the minute the dream started. Ryan went from relaxed and pliant to so tense that his body was trembling with the stress. Brendan set aside the book he was reading and turned his attention to the boy asleep beside him. Ryan's eyes were moving beneath closed lids, his hands fisted in the blanket that Brendan had drawn up around his skinny shoulders only a few minutes earlier.
"Ryan?"
Brendan murmured, stroking a few strands of hair out of the boy's face. There was no response, but Brendan hadn't really expected one.
The dream held Ryan too strongly in its grip for that. He had seen this enough times to know that Ryan would wake when it was over and not a moment before. It was nowhere near as violent as some of Ryan's other visions. There was no thrashing, no screaming or tears on his face. He stayed curled against Brendan's side, the only signs of his discomfort being the slight trembling in his limbs and the occasional murmured word. Brendan continued to pet him, watching Ryan's face with sharp eyes as he waited for the dream to be over. It wasn't long, barely 2 minutes, before Ryan bolted upright, the blankets pooling around his naked waist as he looked around wildly, searching for something. "Ryan?" Brendan asked. "Spencer!" Ryan said, turning away from Brendan. The vampire reached out and pulled him back, not letting go until Ryan was straddling him. A hand beneath Ryan's chin forced him to look Brendan in the eye. "Calm down," Brendan said. "Now tell me what happened." Ryan blushed. At any other time, it would have been a gorgeous sight that Brendan would have mercilessly taken advantage of. He leaned back against the wall and waited, making it clear that no one was going anywhere until Ryan explained.
"I saw Spencer," Ryan mumbled.
"And seeing Spencer automatically turns you bright red. I must have missed that all the other times you've been together," Brendan remarked.
"Don't be an ass," Ryan said, making a face.
Brendan petted his side, more because he liked the sight of angry Ryan than because he felt the need to apologize.
"He was..."
Ryan inclined his head and gestured vaguely with his hand. It took Brendan a moment to decode the message, but when he did, he threw his head back and laughed.
"Was your dear Spencer being fucked, Ryan?" Brendan asked with a smile.
Ryan punched him in the shoulder. Brendan made a mental note to feed him better. He was ridiculously weak.
"Now, why would that upset you? You were afraid when you woke up."
Brendan ran his fingers across Ryan's shoulders, where he could still see some lingering tension. Ryan looked away. Brendan allowed it for a moment before reaching up and turning his face back.
"I had a dream earlier tonight," Ryan admitted. "About the bridge. You know, when Gerard..." Gerard. It seemed there was no escaping him.
Brendan nodded and tried to subtly pull Ryan a little closer. The boy sighed and leaned forward, pressing his face to the side of Brendan's neck.
"Someone saw me there," Ryan said,
his lips moving against Brendan's skin.
This was news to Brendan. No one had mentioned anything to him. It was surprising and a little troubling. No one in their group had been in any position to notice Ryan standing there. Not Beckett, Cardin, Butcher, or... John. He'd left them, had gone to talk to the informant. He could have caught sight of Ryan before Brendan had.
"Such pretty blue eyes." A coincidence, Brendan had thought.
"Okay," Brendan said, splaying his hands across Ryan's back as he coaxed the boy to say more. "He was thinking about Spencer. And just now, I saw his face, Brendan. I saw everything that Spencer saw, right down to the fucking hat on the bedpost."
Brendan drew Ryan back a few inches so he could look him in the face.
"Did you recognize him, Ryan?" he asked, keeping his voice light, even though a sense of foreboding was beginning to eat at his stomach.
It's not my responsibility, Brendan tried to tell himself. What my elders do is none of my business.
He thought back to his promise at the park and tightened his hold on the squirming body above him. There was no getting around it then. He just needed to find a way that wouldn't get him killed.
I don't know his name, Ryan said softly. But I saw him at the bridge. He was talking to that man.
There it was. Confirmation. Irrefutable and certain. Images flashed in Brendan's mind. John Walker at the park, looking at Gerard with hatred and fury before disappearing into the night. And later, that same man standing in the hallway outside his suite, a resigned look on his face as he questioned Brendan about his actions.
I did what I had to do to save him.
No regrets? Brendan closed his eyes and took a deep breath. What he was about to do was incredibly stupid, he knew. His grip tightened on Ryan's waist again, momentarily enjoying the give of Ryan's flesh beneath his fingers, before using his strength to lift the boy and set him aside. Brendan? Ryan asked. Brendan pressed a quick kiss to Ryan's mouth before slipping out of bed and hurrying for his clothes.
Brendan, talk to me!
He dressed quickly and was gone before Ryan thought to crawl over the pile of blankets to get to him. John Walker was not an easy vampire to find. He knew that and prided himself in it. If he didn't want to be disturbed and he was on his own time, the chances of anyone finding him were slim. The skill was honed over centuries of practice. While others were busy chasing pointless baubles or pretty things, he'd been learning how to disappear. It had served him well for those 2 weeks. John pulled back from the human he was draining and watched as the light slowly disappeared from his eyes. In life, they'd been mud brown. Nothing special, not warm with flecks of green or deep with bright undertones. They were boring and ugly. John couldn't help but wonder what his pretty companion saw in them to keep her so enraptured. He'd waited for her to leave before taking her boyfriend, not wanting her to be caught up in his game. That was about as far as his goodwill extended. It had been years since John was vicious with his kills. It was never pleasant for a human when a vampire fed, but there were ways to reduce the pain, to trick them into staying calm and not realizing what was happening until it was too late. This poor human hadn't had any of those kindnesses. John's mood had been too dark for that. He dropped the man to the ground and stared at him for a moment, crumpled and lifeless on the pavement. He was still staring, minutes later, when he heard approaching footsteps. They were loud and deliberately placed, obviously meant to warn John that he was no longer alone. As John waited for the other dandy to show himself, he kept his eyes trained on the dead human. He refused to look away as though he'd been caught doing something wrong. "He must have deserved that," Brendan remarked. "An end that violent is usually reserved for Beckett's victims. Or Cardin's. Maybe Butcher's."
"You could list every vampire in this city if you really wanted to," John replied.
It was true. They were all prone to fits of rage. The humans were usually the ones to bear the brunt of it.
"No, I'll leave it at them," Brendan said. "The others don't even fall into the same category." "What do you want, Brendan?"
John asked tiredly. He sighed and turned toward the younger vampire. As he came closer, John was assaulted by the strong smell of sex and Ryan. No, not only that. There was something else beneath it all. Something that made John's eyes narrow and his jaw clench. Spencer. Something interesting happened, Brendan said, ignoring John's question. I came across a very pretty boy tonight. He had the nicest blue eyes. I could see them from across the street. Don't, John warned. Brendan inclined his head subtly, seemingly acknowledging his bad behavior. You saw Ryan at the bridge, he said instead, changing the subject. John was grateful, but he wasn't stupid enough to think that Brendan had completely abandoned his earlier train of thought. You saw him, and you didn't say anything. Yes, well, it was hardly in his best interest to point it out, John said. No, Brendan agreed. And that puts me in your debt. He slid his hands into his pockets and regarded John with a cool expression. Why do I get the impression that it's only going to be more trouble than it's worth? John asked with a sigh. I don't want anything from you, Brendan. I had my own reasons. We all have our own reasons, he added. Vampires were not known for doing things from the kindness of their hearts, and John was no exception. Your reasons would, no doubt, include Spencer Smith, Brendan said. Watch your mouth, John warned. He turned away, feeling the need to put a great deal of distance between himself and Brendan before he did something he'd later regret. Did you do it on purpose, John Walker? So that one day you'd be able to slip back into the space you'd left behind? The words, softly spoken, stopped John in his tracks, his back going stiff as he processed them. He was shocked that Brendan would be so bold as to think he'd get away with it. You overstep your bounds, John said slowly, forcing himself to keep his voice even as he spoke. Every muscle in his body was tense, and he had to stop himself from scanning the shadows to see if someone had put Brendan up to it. But no, that was a stupid thought. Brendan was barely welcome at the Dandy safe house. No one would use him in their schemes. We found him out by himself tonight. He'd been wandering, Brendan continued. He's searching for something. I could tell by the way he stared at my clothes. Such wide eyes, John. They don't miss a thing. John stared back at Brendan, his face carefully blank. I know what it looks like when you take someone's memories. When you do it properly, it's a fucking work of art. They never even know, not unless someone drops hints or they've left themselves clues. I think it's fucking gorgeous, John, even if I did experience it firsthand. John couldn't help the small quirk of his eyebrow at that. How had Brendan figured it out? Had Beckett taunted him with it? That was likely. John was the only one talking to Brendan, and it was the kind of thing Beckett would delight in doing. John continued to watch Brendan carefully, wondering what exactly he planned to do with the information. Brian is entitled to his secrets, John said after a long pause. Brendan nodded. He is, Brendan agreed. So tell me this, John. How did it happen? I seem to remember spending the night in your bed, but not much else before that. Did you do it then? Brendan smiled sweetly at him. Was it when I was on my knees for you, in front of that mirror, and you were moving behind me? Maybe just before you let me come? Is that why you kept whispering that I had to keep my eyes open? I was young. I didn't know any better.
You're still young, John ground out. You still don't know any better.
Probably not, Brendan said with a shrug. But that doesn't make my statement any less true.
What point are you trying to make, Brendan? John demanded.
He could feel the memories rising to the surface, tempting him with small flashes of images he'd stolen from Brendan's mind. The events themselves weren't all that interesting. Ryan's business was neither sordid nor scandalous. But Brendan had still been wide-eyed and fascinated by everything around him when they'd been sent to Brian's city. That amount of wonderment had always been attractive.
"Did you give him the same courtesy?" Brendan asked, tilting his head to the side and regarding John with a look that he didn't much care for. Brendan looked as though he were actually judging, or getting ready to. If there was one thing Brendan Urey wasn't qualified to do, it was to judge his betters.
"Did I fuck him first, do you mean?" John asked.
"No, I already know you did that," Brendan said dismissively.
"Did you talk to him? Did you make it a smooth transition? Make sure he wasn't terrified as he felt his memories being torn away?"
"You have no proof I did that for you either," John spat.
"No," Brendan said. "But you stayed with me afterwards. I woke up wrapped around you."
"Like a goddamn octopus," John muttered.
Brendan smiled brilliantly at that.
"Yes," he agreed. "Your work was expertly done, seamless and perfect."
Brendan came a little closer, taking slow steps as he moved, giving John the opportunity to step away if he wanted to. He didn't.
"I don't see things and know that I should remember them. I don't keep petting at my arm, knowing that I should feel someone else's hands on my skin."
"He does that, John. I've seen it."
"What happened?"
Brendan reached out, his fingers barely brushing the arm of John's jacket.
"You're still a child, Brendan,"
John said harshly, stepping quickly out of reach.
"I don't have to explain myself to you."
He let his anger show on his face, and watched as Brendan came to the realization that John had finally lost his patience and wasn't going to listen anymore. It wasn't often that Brendan's slow, quietly urging voice failed to get the desired results, and John could see him lose his patience, too.
"No, you don't," Brendan said finally. "If you don't want to discuss it, fine. I can't force you into anything that you don't want to do. But know this, John. You've taken away any protection that Spencer might have had. I can understand not marking him. Not everyone wants the responsibility of caring for a human, and they aren't always receptive to it. There's no point if they're only going to fight you every step of the way. But if you'd at least let your interests be known, he'd have been safer."
"Did I cause permanent brain damage?"
John asked incredulously.
"I don't think you were this stupid as a fledgling, Brendan. If you seriously believe that Spencer would be safer if I'd let him keep his memories, then I worry for Ryan's safety."
Brendan bristled at the mention of Ryan. John laughed mockingly at him, smiling at the look of fury that came over Brendan's face.
"Even marking them doesn't make them safer, Brendan," he said. "It doesn't mean a whole lot to Beckett,
Did you not learn that? Frank wasn't marked, Brendan pointed out. But Ryan is, and Beckett still touched him. He still watches him. The anger on Brendan's face changed to worry, and something inside John's chest wanted to sing. He didn't feel the need to point out that he was the one who'd been sent to keep an eye on the little seer. What do you think Beckett's going to do once Ryan is finally turned? Do you think he'll just pat Ryan on his little head and let him go on his merry way? Things will only be worse from there on out, because then Ryan will actually owe Beckett his allegiance. Everyone swears loyalty to William Beckett, and he's well within his rights to demand whatever he wants from his people. John laughed again and leaned close to Brendan, speaking quietly in his ear, his lips brushing the younger vampire's skin. He'd do it just to spite you. He'd make you watch. The shove wasn't entirely unexpected, but it still made John stumble back a step. He laughed again and brought his hand up, momentarily caressing the side of Brendan's face. You do best to mind your own business, Brendan, he said. Don't pick fights with me. I've got almost 3 centuries on you. You just can't win. He turned his back on Brendan after that, not at all worried that he'd retaliate. John walked slowly and forced himself to take deep, even breaths. He wasn't about to give away how rattled Brendan had actually left him. He thought himself so careful. If Brendan had figured it out... But no, Brendan was hardly the most perceptive vampire in the city, especially lately, when he only had eyes for Ryan and anything involving him. That had to be it, then. Ryan had another vision, and Brendan had taken it upon himself to meddle in John's affairs. John sighed and continued on his way. He had decisions to make. Unpleasant ones. Spencer hadn't meant to jinx himself when he told Ryan that someone was going to miss him. He hadn't even believed it. He'd only wanted an excuse to leave. Spencer was smart. He knew when he was interrupting something important. He tried to push down the flash of annoyance and mild betrayal at that. It wasn't as though Spencer had given Ryan much opportunity to admit that he had a boyfriend. A rich one, apparently, judging by his clothes and the way he held himself. Spencer's eyes narrowed as he thought about Brendan, about his suit and tie, his hat, and the possessive way he'd looked at Ryan. There was something in that, something Spencer should have recognized. He tried to place it, but when he kept coming up against the black hole in his head, it only increased his irrational anger at Ryan's happiness. Even though he knew there was no reason for it, Spencer couldn't let it go. Spencer James Smith, where have you been? His mother's voice was stern and sharp, bringing Spencer back to himself. He was standing in his backyard, glaring at the lawn furniture, and he hadn't even noticed the patio door opening or his parents coming out. They were angry, and Spencer had no doubt that they were about to launch into a lecture about how worried they'd been. He took a deep breath and settled in for the long haul. It might have been Spencer's imagination, but he could have sworn he felt strong hands on his shoulders, trying to chase away the tension. It didn't work, but it was comforting all the same. Being grounded sucked, but there was really nothing his parents could do to make sure he stayed in the house. They couldn't lock his window because it was a fire hazard. They couldn't make him sleep in the guest room where there was no trellis, because the garage roof was right below the window. They couldn't even make him sleep with his window closed, because he'd end up roasting as the temperature steadily climbed higher and their air conditioning still hadn't been repaired. In the end, they asked him not to leave in the middle of the night again, trying to appeal to his common sense. They lived in a dangerous city, after all. No one wanted Spencer to add to the statistics. Spencer humored them for 2 days. And he was surprised that he'd managed even that long. The urge to go only got stronger when he tried to ignore it, and the voice in his head had been reduced to begging. Finally, the tension in his body overwhelmed any desire Spencer might have had to avoid causing his parents more grief. He waited until everyone was asleep and the house was quiet and still. He slowly eased his window open and paused, making sure that the noise hadn't woken anyone. Once he was sure, he sat on the ledge and swung his legs out. John found that there was a difference between knowing he shouldn't do something and actually being able to stop doing it. The realization would take a while to get used to. It went against everything his sire had painstakingly taught him, not to mention the deeply ingrained instincts that had taken hold the minute he'd been turned. He tried not to picture Nick's face, the disappointed expression that would come over him whenever John failed to learn a lesson. John was his own man now, and his sire was long gone. Not that it lessened the sting any. John walked the darkened streets, delighting in the silence around him. He had the entire evening to himself, a luxury that didn't come often, and he intended to enjoy it while he could. Though Gerard's slight against Pete would no doubt eventually cause them all kinds of trouble, things had so far been quiet. John had to admit he was surprised when Pete hadn't just begun to strike out blindly. Patience was not one of his virtues. He was far too much like Beckett, and John could easily see what had attracted the vampire's attention. John could only suppose that any waiting on Pete's part was due to the humans around him. The fair one especially seemed to hold power over him. John wondered how Pete was dealing with the fact that he'd nearly been taken away. Although, to a vampire, one with dandy arrogance especially, maybe he had been. John himself knew that he wouldn't be able to abide someone else's mark on his boy. The human would be better off dead, in John's opinion. John was fairly confident that he wouldn't have to deal with that. Although, perhaps that thought was premature. The only way to ensure that something stayed secret was to make sure no one else knew. And now, at least one other person had found out about Spencer. True. Over the years, first at Beckett's side and later at John's, Brendan had learned discretion. The problem was that while he might not intend to reveal John's business, everyone had a weakness. Brendan's was obvious, and his position in the gang was precarious at best. He was still a non-entity in the Dandy House, acknowledged only if Beckett himself required him. When William Beckett was angry, he was spiteful and dangerous. But John was surprised by the restraint he was currently showing. He could have sent Brendan away, or occupied so much of his time that he never had a free moment of himself. He could even have been confined to his suite, forbidden to leave except to hunt. Perhaps the potential benefits of keeping Ryan somewhat happy outweighed those of berating Brendan. There was no doubt in his mind that all of Beckett's future plans involved Ryan Ross in some shape or form. John wondered how it must feel for Brendan to know that his survival hinged on the affection of a fickle human boy. He thought back to the last time he'd watched the two of them, to Ryan's smile as he leaned closer, the sweet blush on his cheeks as Brendan murmured in his ear, the way he tugged Brendan inside that horrible apartment complex. And realized that maybe fickle was the wrong adjective to use. Not that it improved the situation any. John slowed his pace as he approached the bridge. He couldn't hear any other vampires or any of the more skilled hunters, but he was not so stupid as to trust to that. More than one vampire had lost his life due to arrogance. He looked around, studying the shadows with narrowed eyes, waiting until he was satisfied that he was alone before heading toward the little gravel path that led down to the water. It was steep, and only his preternatural balance kept him from sliding all the way down. He should have taken the path on the other side. To say that he didn't know why he kept coming back would be a lie, and John was above lying to himself. Lying to others was par for the course, especially when one was a dandy. But lying to oneself was dangerous. He knew that he was there to see Spencer, to watch while he chased some phantom memory, some invisible touch. John would go so far as to say he needed to see him, to know Spencer was safe even if he was hurting. There was also a fair bit of penance in it, if he was being completely honest, though whether it was for having done such a terrible job at removing the memories, or for having wanted something so much in the first place, John wasn't entirely sure. He didn't think he really wanted to know. John heard the footsteps before he could see who was making them. His sharp sense of smell told him who it was regardless, and he wasted no time in slipping away and concealing himself. It wasn't long before he caught sight of a pair of light blue sneakers, as Spencer made his way down the same path that John had come down. A gangly teenage boy didn't have the same balance as a centuries-old vampire, and Spencer's feet slid out from under him. He tumbled down the gravel path, splitting open the skin of his palms as he tried to stop his fall. John clenched his jaw as the scent of his blood wafted over on the breeze. His teeth ached, and his hands clenched into fists. He was not a slave to his thirst, but he couldn't deny the sheer want that settled low in his belly. "Son of a bitch," Spencer muttered, as he slowly got to his feet. His legs were unsteady, and John could tell that his knee was scraped below the hole in his jeans. Blood was pooling on the boy's palms, several of the scratches deep enough to bleed profusely. Spencer moved slowly, in obvious pain, as he headed toward the other path, the one that was far less steep than the one he'd fallen down. He paused for a moment, leaning against one of the support pillars as he rotated his ankle, making sure that it wasn't broken. Then, with another curse and gritted teeth, he made his way back up to the road. John supposed there was no point in staying, not if he couldn't think clearly because of the pain. He shoved away his disappointment at that. Once he was gone, John stepped out of the shadows and made his way to the support pillar that Spencer had leaned against. There was a smudge of blood on the dirty metal surface. It was difficult to see, but John could smell it clearly enough. He pulled a handkerchief from his pocket and wiped at it. It reminded him so much of their first meeting that John had to close his eyes and force the memories away. He held on to the handkerchief for a while, fingers clenched around it as he took deep, even breaths. The smell was sweet, pure Spencer, and John wished that he'd been able to taste him more than once. He didn't hear the footsteps until they were nearly upon him. John shoved the stained fabric into his pocket and turned to see William Beckett standing not far away. It was with a start that John realized he'd lost track of his surroundings for an untold number of minutes. His hand clenched around the handkerchief in his pocket as the stupidity of his actions was driven home with every measured step that Beckett took. He could have been there the whole time, could have seen Spencer on the road, limping home like so much injured prey. So easy to pick off, bruised and bloody, without any protection to speak of. John was not young enough, had never been naive enough to believe that coincidence had brought Beckett to Sampson Bridge, no matter how nonchalant his expression. John had earned his right to privacy, had won it through strength and loyalty, through time spent at the side of 4 dandy leaders. He wasn't prone to stupidity, didn't make a habit of putting his desires and fantasies above the safety of those he was meant to protect. Except tonight, when John had very nearly led Beckett right to Spencer, rendering all the precautions he'd taken completely useless. John Walker had spent centuries cultivating a persona, a reputation that preceded him no matter where he went. He was silent and stoic, and so very good at putting the needs of others above his own. It looked like he would have to make a decision and draw upon those qualities to ensure that he didn't go back on his word. It had to end, that much was very clear. When it came to the boy, it was an all-or-nothing scenario. There was no middle ground, no way that John could stay detached enough to make it work. He watched as Beckett came closer, choosing his steps carefully as he navigated the trash that littered the ground. His eyes weren't on John's face as he approached. They were on his pocket, where John's fingers were still twisted in a handkerchief stained with Spencer's blood. William Beckett made it a priority to know what his people were up to. He knew all about the butcher's secret lessons with Siska and the fledgling's near desperation to find his talent. Though he didn't talk about it, Cardin was in the midst of planning a grand gesture to encourage Thomas to return to the city. Nate was steadfastly ignoring Brendan and pretending that he'd never had a fledgling crush. And Brendan, well, his time was spent with Ryan when Beckett wasn't sending him on pointless errands just because he could. John Walker, however, was a mystery. He'd never been particularly forthcoming about his free time, and Beckett hadn't ever pushed the issue, knowing very well that John was, technically, his elder, and had long ago earned some semblance of privacy. The problem was, he'd never gone to such lengths to disappear before. He usually crossed paths with someone during the course of an evening. That no one had seen him was strange. To say that it had piqued Beckett's interest was an understatement. He'd started keeping tabs on the elder vampire, following whenever he found himself with time to spare and no other games to play. For the most part, he'd watched from the shadows, but now and then he'd show himself, smile as he walked past, or ask a few pointed questions. Beckett was man enough to admit that it was more to flatter his own ego than anything else. After all, what leader didn't like the feeling of being all-knowing? Still, his curiosity would have been short-lived if he hadn't found anything out of the ordinary, or if he'd only come to realize that John had apparently found a new hunting ground. Sampson Bridge was a horrible place, but Beckett could have overlooked that. Maybe John enjoyed slumming. Beckett himself occasionally hunted in Hood territory, after all. But no, there'd been something else. Something that had made the demon in Beckett laugh itself sick. For all his posturing, and all the time and energy spent in keeping himself so separate from the other dandies, it turned out that John Walker was no different than the rest of them. He hunted, he played his games, and he took his trophies. The scent of old, stale blood was generally unpleasant, but any vampire could overlook it if it had the right memories to go along with it. Wide, scared eyes, maybe, or even high-voiced pleading. Beckett's own personal favorites usually involved lovely mouths, blushing cheeks, tight bodies. Not to mention the look of betrayal as his teeth cut through the afterglow. The scent coming from John had been faint, but recognizable. It had something hidden in his pocket, something with enough personal significance that he hadn't offered to explain it away, or even share the story. He hadn't acknowledged it at all, as though keeping it to himself could somehow make it not exist. Maybe one of the young ones wouldn't have noticed. Nate and Michael, most likely, possibly Siska. But Beckett's senses were far beyond that. If Beckett was being honest, and he tried to do that now and then, if only for the novelty, he'd admit that he was insulted, and that those feelings played a part in his decision to learn more about the Elder Vampire's activities. Imagine his surprise to cross paths with him once again, and find his curiosity so well rewarded. "John," he said by way of greeting, kicking aside an aluminum can with a ragged hole punched in the side. "Back again, I see." "My safe house isn't far," John replied with a graceful shrug, not bothering to question Beckett's own presence there. "Few of us hunt here," he continued. "Peace and quiet are powerful lures." "Yes," Beckett agreed. "The house hasn't been the same since the butcher brought Siska to us. And Nate, the poor boy, there's no one with the time to properly focus all of his energy." "It's such a shame when we lose one to Peter," John remarked. "Or to any hunter, really." Beckett narrowed his eyes as he decided how exactly to take the comment. Most dandies were smart enough not to mention Peter where Beckett could hear. There were few taboo subjects among his people, but Beckett's wayward fledgling was definitely one of them. In the weeks since Gerard's departure, the others had taken pains to remain silent on the subject. That John had so casually dropped his name into the conversation was irritating, but also telling. Beckett never stayed around for long when Pete was mentioned. John was trying to use that. Beckett, being the vampire he was, only came closer and settled in for a long conversation. "Have you seen Brendan's boy tonight, John?" he asked. "No," John said. A lesser man would have tried to lie, to tell Beckett what they thought he might like to hear. It was no secret that Beckett valued information about the little seer, to the point where others often came to him, unsolicited, to tell him that they'd seen him around the city. That John didn't play into that game had always pleased Beckett. "I just thought that maybe you'd seen him," Beckett continued. "After all, you and Brendan were quite close, weren't you?" "You sent him with me to Brian when he was still very young," John said. "I kept him from offending everyone and embarrassing himself. I don't know if that qualifies as close." "You fucked him back then," Beckett continued. "I don't remember you turning him away either," John pointed out. Beckett shrugged. In those first few years after Brendan had crawled out of his grave, he'd spent most of his days in Beckett's bed. Brendan's excuse, that sleeping on his own reminded him too much of waking alone in the dark, had been nothing short of transparent. It hadn't stopped Beckett from taking what was being offered, though it hadn't lasted long by their standards. John was watching Beckett impassively, though he could see a hint of curiosity in his eyes. If he wanted to flatter himself, Beckett would say there was a bit of wariness there, too, almost as though the Elder Vampire was waiting for the point of their current trip down memory lane. "He spent his mornings with you when Ryan was at the house," Beckett said. "There were many places in the safe house that Brendan could have gone. The empty suite, for one, though he could have stayed with Butcher and Siska, or even with young Nate. Crush or no, he would more than likely have kept his hands to himself, if Brendan had been concerned with such matters. My suite is next to his. I imagine he wanted to be close in case of an emergency, John replied.
Beckett didn't bother to point out that, had there been an emergency during the day, Brendan wouldn't have been able to do anything about it. They were dead to the world while the sun was up.
Besides, John continued, would you give a human boy that much power over you?
Of course not, Beckett scoffed. He'd never even given Pete that much.
It was easy to tell by the set of John's shoulders, the tension in the muscles, that the other vampire was growing irritated with the conversation.
Is there somewhere else you need to be? Beckett thought. Someone you should be seeing to?
He smiled again, a slow expression tinged with smug satisfaction. It was so rare that anyone got to see John Walker's facade crack.
He forgave you for taking his memories, Beckett said, after enjoying the tension for a moment longer.
So you were the one who told him about that, John said, not even bothering to properly reply to the statement.
I thought as much.
Well, we use what ammunition we have, Beckett said with a laugh. Using Ryan was getting old. Brendan's strong, but if you know what you're doing, it doesn't take much to hurt him.
No, it doesn't, John agreed. It's his biggest weakness.
I suppose I should have beaten it out of him, Beckett mused. But he has such lovely skin. It's a sin to damage it. Beckett thought back to the brief moments he'd had to admire the purple ring of bruises he'd put around Brendan's throat after Gerard cut the camera feed. The contrast had been stark and beautiful. A minor sin, then. One he could live with.
What is the point of this, Beckett? John finally asked with a sigh.
His hand came out of his pocket as he shrugged.
I know there has to be one.
Beckett's expression was sweet and almost innocent, though he knew the other vampire could see right through it.
I was just wondering if you'd gone to him for advice. After all, you can hardly go to Cardin, can you?
His boy ran away.
Butcher, well, he'd barely seen Siska 3 times before deciding to keep him. He didn't come to me, so who else does that leave? Unless, of course, you didn't go to anyone. And that's just sad, John Walker. Sad and impractical. It's been so long since you've been human. I'm sure you don't even remember what it was like. They're so fragile. There's so much you have to do to keep their little bodies alive.
What are you talking about? John asked carefully. Beckett darted forward, moving fast enough that a regular human wouldn't have been able to see his actions, and reached into John's pocket, pulling out the bloody handkerchief and pressing it up against John's nose. John glared and pulled the piece of fabric away from Beckett's hand, shoving it back into his pocket with controlled, angry movements. The look he fixed on Beckett was furious and more than a little dangerous. If Beckett was the kind of leader who worried over his post, he might even have taken a step back. As it was, he stood his ground, one eyebrow raised in question as he waited for John to speak.
Is it a boy, John Walker? Or a girl? Do you prefer soft curves or hard lines? He prodded.
Sometimes they squirm, John said angrily. He was messy. The body won't be found, so it's rather rude of you to comment on it. Isn't that what we teach the fledglings, Beckett? Appearances are everything. To be preserved at all costs. I seem to remember you telling that to the children at the house.
My mistake,
Beckett said smoothly, affecting an apologetic look.
So, no human then? No special little thing has managed to turn your head?
No,
John bit out. Pity, Beckett replied. Maybe someday. We can hope for you.
Go right ahead if it makes you happy, John said.
Oh, it does, Beckett laughed. I'll leave you to your lurking then, shall I? After all, you had a point. Peace and quiet is definitely in short supply. William Beckett was not the kind of vampire who allowed others to lie to his face. That John Walker had just done so made him wonder how many other times the elder vampire had gotten away with it. People tended to take whatever John said at face value. His years of service, years of experience, saw to that. Maybe it was time to take a greater interest in what exactly he was doing. Starting with the pretty thing Beckett had seen stumbling across the road. His open wound had smelled so lovely, exactly like the blood in John Walker's pocket.